Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana. It's Colt
Cabana. All right, how you guys doing? Come on in, sit down, relax. Let's make the most of it. Put in those tweaked audio earbuds and listen to me for the next hour as we talk on the Art of Wrestling. It's a professional wrestling podcast. It's a life podcast. It's a personal journal. It's an entryway into the minds, the souls, the hearts, and the lives of the people involved in the world of professional wrestling. I'm your host. My name is Colt Cabana. My alias is Boom Boom. I am a Chicago native, an entrepreneur, a small businessman, a podcaster. But most importantly, hey, I am a professional wrestler. We are sitting here live in the studio. Apartment in, yes, back from Mexico. I'm in Chicago, Illinois. Before we get any further, let's get some business out of here. This is a fan-supported and listener-supported podcast supported by people just like you. We give it to you free of charge every single Thursday on WeLoveColt.com and iTunes. Please subscribe on iTunes so we can give it to you Thursday morning. Goes right to your computer. You don't even have to worry about it. If you want to support, you can. Hey, how about leaving a positive five-star review on iTunes? Maybe telling a friend what's going on over here, what we're doing. But if you got a couple bucks, I appreciate the support monetarily to keep this thing rolling. ColtMerch.com. That's the only way I ask monetarily. ColtMerch.com. I have t-shirts, buttons, pictures, posters, DVDs. I have the brand new stick figure t-shirts drawn by the talented and award-winning, you'll hear more about that later, Jill Thompson, at the Jill Thompson on Twitter. And I've got some new posters coming up. I got the new buttons by MutantCactus.com. These are all great ways you can support this podcast, keep this thing rolling for free. That's ColtMerch.com. Hey, my old buddy, Brian Danielson. Brian is now on the podcast. We're having him on. We did the movie. Now we're doing the podcast. And we chat a long time in here, so that I'll keep this monologue a little bit short. I won't ramble too much. Great to have him on. Great to see him. And he talks a lot about camaraderie in here, missing the days of being with the boys. And, you know, I talked about last week I went to a tour in Mexico, and that's the little things. You know, you do the shows. I wrestle with these legends, but at the end of the day, you know, you're stuck for days upon hours with these guys. And either you can make friends, like I did with Liz Mark Jr., my new buddy, or, you know, you could ignore people and kind of live a miserable life, which some people choose to do. But I had a good time. And I want to talk about, you know, last week I talked about how I wasn't that scared. Nothing happened. Well, I didn't mention this. I just found out this tidbit. Chavo says to me, hey, you know why there wasn't such a good house in Rio Bravo like last time? And I thought that was interesting, but I was all right. I thought maybe just the numbers were down. He was like, oh, because they bombed the Pizza Hut and the KFC, so people were scared to come out of their houses. Yes, I was wrestling in a town. They could have bombed the Pizza Hut, the KFC, and the local high school gym we were at, but they didn't. Just the Pizza Hut and the KFC. And some people think that's, I don't know, death threats or whatnot. I think it's a wake-up call. Pizza Hut, maybe you should start serving a little bit of better pizza. That's just, I don't think it had anything to do with the mafia or gangs or gang warfare in Mexico. It was, hey, Pizza Hut, step up your game. We've all had the buttered crust. It gets annoying after two pieces. Maybe it's time to do a little Chicago style. But hey, you never know. I don't know what's going through these guys' mind, but that was an interesting tour. And again, back to the camaraderie. Brian, you know, Brian was on the indie scene for so long, and he did all these travels, and we wrestled, and it's all documented on the Road Diaries. But it's fun now to sit down and to hang out with him. So this is a little, we're back to it. We're back to me and him sitting, talking, and we're filming it. Audibly. Yeah, we're filming it audibly. Just for you guys.
Org.
Now, the song this week is by Kimmy Dawson. She sang the song for Juno. This is a tribute. It's called Captain Lou. Now, if you're going to skip this over, I assume by the end of this conversation with Brian, you're going to be back listening to this once again. There's a little surprise in there for you if you didn't get the hint already. All right, here we go. Kimmy Dawson, Captain Lou. We'll be back with Brian Daniels, with Daniel Bryan. All right, enjoy.
When Michael died, people all over the world did the moonwalk and the thriller. When Patrick died, people all over the world tried to do that lift. When Farrah died, people all over the world feathered their hair and put on top pants. When John Hughes died, people all over the world said, Bueller, Bueller. Well, today we lost another hero. We lost another friend. Today we lost the world's greatest manager. Today we lost the captain. Yeah, today we lost the captain.
I hope a million albums drop and a million hits get locked and a million ears get bent and a million bodies slammed. A million miles driven and a million lives start moving. Just never ever know when it'll be your time to go.
Ever know it'll be your time to go. He was often imitated, but you cannot duplicate the one who taught you how to win, the one who taught you how to have fun. Really, really changed me as a kid back in the 80s. The first time I saw him in Cindy, colorful and crazy, in my bag of jams and my different color sneaks. They could do it, I could do it, even if I got teased. I know I'm not the only one my age reveals they owe ya. You set a generation up for three with your persona, with your rubber banded face and your rubber banded beard. You gave a lot of kids permission to let out their inner weird. Here's to you, Captain Lou. Yeah, I love you. Yeah, Captain Lou.
How you doing? Back on the podcast with a gratefully bearded gentleman sitting in front of me, Daniel Bryan,
Brian Danielson. Who knows? Lloyd Boner. I go by many names.
Actually, I wanted to ask, like, when Seidel became Evan Bourne, I was like used to the Evan transition. Are you like, do people call you Daniel now?
Yeah, people call me Daniel, and in fact Teddy Long calls me Soul Man Danny B. And like Cody Rhodes is taken to call me Dirty Dan and stuff like that. And so but it is strange when people just call me Daniel or Danny or something like that, because like
the nickname has a nickname.
Yeah. So you know, it is kind of strange.
Wow. All right, well, for like, I don't know. How's it going there with everything? I mean, let's ask this. After doing like fucking the indie ride, the roller coaster for so long, what's the weirdness of? I mean, or that transition to.
Do you know what the strangest thing to me is? And I was just thinking about this the other day. As I was listening, to your podcast with Sal Rinaro, and it actually made me very nostalgic because it seems to me like I don't have that camaraderie with people in WWE with the talent there. And it's and I'm not sure why that is, but I had talked to Nigel McGuinness maybe a week or two ago, and then, you know, and just thinking about like Generico and like Jimmy Jacobs and stuff like that, there's a certain like, I don't know, the conversations and stuff were different, and like you would it's just strange. The relationships that I have with the other WWE talent is not the close relationships that I had with the people on the independents.
Do you think money like has to do with anything? And I everything with me goes back. Like,
right. You know, and it could be something to do with money. It could be, and I was trying to think about this because I'm sure there are guys who I would get along with really well. But the thing is, you're not riding with everybody. You know, we would actually all just get in a van. So you have to talk to everybody and you'd be at all these shows with all these different people, but you can literally be at a WWE show and see somebody once or twice and only say hello to them and not actually have to communicate with them, you know? Ooh. And so
we got a guest here.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just strange.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but on the, like the house show loops you're doing, are you guys or overseas tours?
Yeah, but you're essentially with the same guys all the time. Like, I ride with the same guys all the time, you know? And so you're not – so somebody like, for example, Jimmy Jacobs. When I first met Jimmy Jacobs, I hated him, right? Like, you know, you just look at him and you're just like, oh, gosh. And, you know, and he's kind of a loudmouth a little bit. And then – but then when you get to know Jimmy, I love him. Like, right. He's hilarious. He's smart, you know? Like, he's fun to talk to. He's interesting, you know? He has good stories. Like, and the same thing with like El Generico, not that, you know, not that I speak Spanish, but right. if I did, you know, he'd be very funny. And so, I mean, you know, it's like, I'm sure there are guys like I would really get along with in WWE, but I just never ride with them. So,
well, who's your riding crew?
I ride with Ted DiBiase and Sheamus. Okay. And so, yeah, they're both good guys. We all get along real well, but it's a completely different atmosphere than the nonsense and shenanigans that, you know, were you with us when me, Adam Pearce, and I want to say, what was his name? He was in WWE. He was good friends with Pearce, remember?
X-Pac?
No.
Hulk Hogan?
No.
DDP, Pearson?
Brent Albright. Albright, okay. Yeah, and we all got these, like, cut-off vests. And
no,
these cut-off...
I saw the picture. The
yeah,
cam, the
yeah, yeah. It was, like, these cut-off jean shirts and stuff. And, like, I mean, just pulling off and just doing shenanigans. And,
well, you've always... And we've talked about... we've talked about this forever, obviously. And we had the idea to do the Road Diaries, too. But the idea of... of the Butlins camps, and like that is riding the camps in England, which you were you always praised highly.
Yeah, I loved Butlins, and mostly because it was just so much fun, right? We go there, you set up the ring, you tear down the ring, and a lot of people think that kind of stuff is demeaning. Like if you asked a lot of WWE superstars to set up the ring and tear down the ring, they probably wouldn't do it. I was doing it as recently as 2008 and had no problems doing it because it's fun with the boys, you know what I mean? It's just we go, we drive, we do it, we go to the bar afterwards, and I don't even drink, but we're doing karaoke and we're dancing and we're having a good time, and you know, it's.
I say goodbye, buddy.
Goodbye, buddy. My shoes are dry.
We're podcasting in Punk's Hotel Palace here.
You say a lot of bad things about me now that I'm gone.
He's the worst.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a beard.
Yeah. CM Punk's beard is weak.
I would usually, and I guess to keep yourself sane in all this stuff, is I think I would. You have to like play games when you put up the ring and like sing random songs or like these are tactics I would use to keep myself from going crazy. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
almost
I...
like a what were those things? Like a dozer,
yeah.
You know, from Fraggle Rock.
Well, it's interesting because I never minded setting up rings or anything like that. I like the camaraderie. That's what one of the things I loved about wrestling. But it's funny because me and Claudio Castagnoli, we had this really long trip to Australia, and I was adamant about not complaining. In my yoga class, we were doing this complaint-free month. We were going to try to go the entire month without complaining, and I had this wristband. And every time you complained, you had to switch your wristband. So, but this flight, it was literally like Claudio's was like 38 hours. Mine was 32 to get to Australia. We had like 8-hour layovers. And instead of complaining, we just, and I don't know what this is from, but it reminds me of slaves in those Disney movies. And we just sing, oh, we, oh, oh. Oh, yeah. So
I mean, love this flight. Right. I love to travel.
So,
well, you dropped the yoga bomb on us like that. Eccentric? Is this the word?
Eccentric.
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 I mean, you have some. Now you're a vegan out of left
now
field.
I'm a vegan.
You're a yoga man.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing yoga for a long time, and the vegan thing was more of a health issue. When I had gotten signed by WWE, or when I had gotten offered the deal, it was at the same time as Nigel McGuinness in 2009, and we both ran into extensive health problems that when they were doing all the testing and everything. And so I had elevated liver enzymes, which is covered in Wrestling Road Diaries. I had some heart issues. I had high blood pressure. And this is all I ate relatively healthy. And
Except for a Cinnabon.
Oh my gosh. Every probably once every couple months I would have a Cinnabon. And one time I had 3 Cinnabons in a row. but that's besides the point. But like so I went to my doctor and I kept getting staph infections. In 2009 I had 3 different staph infections, 5 skin infections total. And it's mostly because I grapple so much. I'll spend 3 to 5 hours a day grappling, and no matter how clean they keep the mats, you're still going to get some sort of infection. Well, you can get some sort of infection. There's bacteria on there, but most people don't. And I am just very susceptible to them because I have a really weak immune system. So anyways, I went to the doctor and he said one way to help that is you can just stop grappling so much, which is, it's kind of my passion and my hobby. And so, and the other thing is you can try this vegan diet. And the idea is that meat takes so much energy for your body to digest that you're not using that energy to fight off bacteria. And so, since I've been vegan, I haven't had any skin infections at all, and I'm still grappling quite a bit. I have gotten sick, but not as much as I usually do.
Do you miss meat?
I miss the convenience of meat. At 11 o'clock at night when you're driving through Louisiana, there's not exactly a lot of vegan options. So I have to bring a lot of food with me on the road.
Now, you said grappling is your passion.
Yes.
And in that same statement, you said you no longer eat meat.
Yes.
But I know that there was another passion for bacon.
Okay. So this is a story. The best present I've ever gotten anybody. So I was dating this girl, and I don't remember what her name was. This was when I was in high school and I worked for KB Toys, right? And it's that awkward time where we just started dating around Christmas, and I bring her over this present, and she's not there, and so I drop it off at her parents, and she comes back and she's with all her friends, and she opened it up, and like it's really light, and it's wrapped in paper and stuff. And like, oh, we think he got you lingerie. And keep in mind, I was 17 years old. I would never get a girl lingerie then. I probably wouldn't get a girl lingerie now, you know. And so she's thinking it's lingerie. She opens it up. She pulls out this t-shirt that says bacon is my passion. And we never went out again after that, shockingly enough. But it was super over with her because I was deadlifting at home, and all of a sudden I'm in the middle of deadlifting and probably, you know, 300 pounds or something, and I'm in the middle of doing this, boom, and a girl comes up behind me and whispers in my ear, bacon is my passion. and I dropped the weight and I turned around, and it was her best friend from high school who I'd met once, you know. And
was this years ago and when you're deadlifting, or like recently enough?
This was 2005.
Okay.
So this is a good story
stuck with that crew.
Yes. Yeah. That was a good, let me see, 7 years after.
Now what goes through your mind? Like, there was no S in is, right? Was it IZ?
No, it was IS.
Oh, okay. I thought it was.
Yeah, I know. I wish I would have thought of it is.
So you're like, okay, I'm dating this girl. What does she like? What should I buy her?
No.
You put it all together.
No. So it was, one time we were talking on the phone one time and she said, bacon is my passion. And she went, she went off on it for probably a couple minutes, you know, and I thought it was hilarious, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's great. I'm going to get her this t-shirt that says bacon is my passion. And see, that's where I make the mistake is I listen to women. You don't actually want to listen.
You're one of those.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys. So yeah.
KB Toys.
KB Toys. Worked at KB Toys.
There's got to be some... Were you there for the toys or for the good times?
No. So, man, I just didn't want to work at McDonald's anymore. And so
you were working at McDonald's?
Well, no. So here's the – it's a long story. But I worked at McDonald's when I was 15. I moved in with my dad, started baling hay, which was – so I moved in with my dad.
There's all this stuff we got to get into.
Yeah. Okay. And so I moved to my dad's place, which was Castle Rock, and I was baling hay. I worked at this place called Wilson's Leather. And then I moved back to Aberdeen, and then the only place that was really hiring was McDonald's. So I took the job because I just needed a job to save for wrestling school. And then, but then as soon as KB Toys hired me, bam, I was on it because that was way better than McDonald's.
You jumped ship.
I jumped ship. I don't even think I gave my notice. I think I left whatever check that I had at McDonald's. I think I left it there, and I just never came back. I didn't give them a notice. I just stopped coming in, which is the. I've done that with two different jobs too. So one at this cookie factory when I worked in San Antonio, Texas, when I first got my developmental deal in 2000, I had worked at this cookie factory for like two weeks, and then as soon as I got my developmental deal, I never went in again.
Wait, in my mind, it's like a manufacturing plant of cookies.
No. It's like one of those stands in the mall. Like, I don't even. Yeah, you know, you're just out there and. It's interesting. So I have to preface this by saying I have a lot of gay friends and my stepbrother's gay and all that kind of stuff. But so I started working at this cookie factory and it was in the middle of a mall and there was a girl working there with me and some other guys. And she was like,
bacon is my passion.
No. And I, there was a good looking girl walking. I was like, oh, man, that chick is hot. And she turns to me. She goes, what? And I was like, huh? And she just said, aren't you gay? And I was like, no. Why would you think that? They said, oh, because
you got Cindy, a bacon is my passion.
No, because a lot of the guys who worked there were gay, and they thought I was gay. So that's why,
Do you throw off those vibes?
I don't think so. Now I have – that's why I have the beard, because the beard
– say, hey, I'm a man.
Yeah, no. No, I mean it's just funny because it was just such a strange thing when I was 18 years old for that to happen. So
– I want to go beard, but I also want to go like also manly and manly talks, the Aberdeen, Washington stuff.
Okay.
Now, we've had these conversations, but I think it just all kind of slips through my mind because I don't understand the world.
Okay.
So maybe you can hammer it down a little more. Now, Nigel calls you a clam digger or whatever.
Okay, yes.
But like that stuff's legit? Or
yeah, like so I love digging clams.
Fuck.
Yeah, like it's done seasonally, you know, and there's specific weeks that you go out and do it, but you go out and dig clams. And the things that shock people is there's a thing called a clam gun, right? And it's not an actual gun or anything, but it's like, imagine when you put a straw in a thing of Coke and you put your thumb over the top of the straw and you pull out the Coke, right? And then when you let it go, then the Coke, it's the same thing with the sand. It's like the cylinder that you drive down into the sand, you put your thumb over a hole, and then you pull out the sand, and hopefully this clam is in the sand. So,
and were you doing this at a young age?
Yeah, I've been doing this since I was a kid.
Is that like a kid thing, or is that like an
Aberdeen kid thing? No, like it's a lot of people in Washington do it. Like people drive to the coast just to do this from hours away. Like, but like
Disneyland, nah. Yeah,
but it's not a kid thing. It's like my dad still does it. Like I still love to do it. Like all my friends do it. So,
and what's the benefit of clam digging?
Clams. Clams are delicious.
Oh, you
and
eat the clams.
Yeah, you eat the clams.
Do you make clamshell necklaces and stuff?
No.
With your sister, maybe?
No, I've never done that. But it's interesting because when you go and say you get clams in like a noodle dish or something like that, they're not the kind of clams that we have on. We have razor clams, which are these big, long clams, and they're really good. So
are you like a picky clam guy?
No, not really. I actually don't. When I was a kid,
are you part of a vegan diet?
No, I don't eat clams now. Yeah, so
your father must be so disappointed in
you. You have no idea. Really? You have no idea. So my dad is like this big hunter, and like he does all this stuff. Last year, for Thanksgiving, I had this tofurkey turkey that I was going to bring in, and he's like, I'm not allowing that in
my house. Not in my house.
Not in my house. That abomination will not come in my house.
I'm so disappointed. Traveling the world, doing your dream. I am disappointed in you.
So, yeah.
We saw your sister in the movie. How's her kid doing? Okay.
Oh, yeah, great. I actually just stopped by there this week, and Hayden is now 2 years old, and, you know, talking and running around, and she's just so cute and shy. And actually, my sister's pregnant with a second child which is awesome. So
let's document that, too.
Yeah.
She said they had a movie.
Yeah. So.
When I think of you, Brian, I think of almost like our era of wrestling wouldn't like really have a Lou Thez or anything, but like that's like kind of you, I think.
Yeah. It's weird because, so I just did this signing for a collectibles thing, and it's interesting because a lot of people will come up to me and be like, man, I love that Ring of Honor stuff. You're the best. You know, you're the best wrestler I've ever seen type stuff. And I don't buy into a lot of that kind of stuff. But it's interesting how differently those people perceive me from WWE people, because it's a totally different world. And I'm treated and perceived totally different. So.
And you notice that.
Oh, yeah, totally, totally.
Like, well, so I guess to almost take me through that. Like, would it be if you're walking to a show? Mm-hmm. And is there a section of people, or where do you notice the split of people?
Well, I mean, you can just notice it when it's in lines like this. So it's a line of people who are coming up to me and being like, man, I love that match you had with Nigel McGuinness. Or I was there, because we're in New York City. So I was there for that match with Morishima. I was there the night that you detached your retina and all that kind of stuff. And so, like, man, that was awesome, that sort of thing. And they're really passionate about it. Whereas the WWE fans are like,
and then, like, next to him is a giant kid and, like, Mysterio mask.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
And then they're like, oh, Daniel Bryan, I hope you cash in your Money in the Bank briefcase. You know, are you really growing your beard to WrestleMania? like that sort of thing, you know, and it's the way they treat you is different. So.
Are you doing is this the hockey thing? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. It didn't start off as that. It just started off as, I just hate shaving. I don't know what's worse, shaving my beard or trimming my beard, but I don't want to do either. And so it's just a matter of growing it out, and then it's a good story kind of.
But the first time you did it was like awesome.
Yeah.
And I guess there's a couple stories almost coming out of that. I remember, and I think it was almost going back, I think it was Lagana. Like, because you were, like, doing some enhancement matches, yeah.
Still doing enhancement matches.
But, like, you had this beard, and then someone, like, came up. I remember you coming back, and, like, someone came up to me and, like, was like, I'm going to pitch an idea. And you're like, oh, I was just here to kind of collect food or whatever. But,
yeah.
But then, and then also, like, something with New Japan, right?
I don't remember. So this is the problem, is that I have had multiple concussions and I don't remember very well.
Jeez, but, we're doing a podcast.
Yeah, but I do remember the Lagana thing because I was growing my beard out. And the whole thing started with Christopher Daniels. I think it was Christopher Daniels saying, I don't know if Christopher Daniels started it or what, but I lost my razor in Japan. I lost my Bic razor that I was using to shave. And
I
hated doing anyways. And I got back to the United States. And you know those – to get those nice razors, they're like $12, right? And so I was like, I'll just get one next week. I'll get one next week. And then all of a sudden, it's been a while and I haven't gotten a razor. I'm just like, screw it. I'm just going to grow it out. And Christopher Daniels was always telling me, and it's very true, I'm a slave to my whims. Like, I just, like, get these whims and be like, I'm going to do this. Okay. You know, like, it's so. And then, I was doing a dark match in 2005 or some sort of match for WWE. And then Dave Lagana comes up to me and be like, do you know that guy Bobby Fischer, the chess guy who went crazy? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, yeah, I would love for you to be wrestling's Bobby Fischer, like this crazy
And that's right up your alley.
It's
almost
right up my alley.
Are you a chess player too?
I
see you chessing.
I do enjoy a good game of chess. So
does not surprise me.
So yeah, but that never panned out, obviously.
Panned out. It almost, and like it's nice for me to see it now, like, officially panning out. however you, I don't know how it's seen, but like for me, you know, like I get to turn on TV and see my friend on television, but you've had a run of like kind of no, kind of no.
Yeah. And you know what? It's interesting because even since I signed with WWE, it's been kind of no. And, like,
but that kind of no now is way different than sitting in Memphis with Regal and Brookside, right?
It's different because there was so much more optimism there. Like, because you're 18, I was 18, 19 years old when all that was happening, and you just think, man, you know, like, the sky is the limit with this, you know? And so it was like, oh, we're going to bring back the cruiserweight division. You guys are in. Oh, we're not. You guys are down. You guys, well, wait, no, you're fired. And, you know, and it was, but none of it fazed me because at the time, you know, I was originally signed for $500 a week, which seemed like $1 zillion. So
Cookie Factory wasn't giving.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, $26,000 a year is not a lot of money. To me, it was the entire world, you know, and it was a huge difference between being able to start just living on $20 a month for groceries and all of a sudden, man, I can buy regular food. I can go out to eat. I mean, all this stuff was just stuff that even as a kid, because I was raised in kind of a poor family, we never went out to eat. And so being able to do that kind of stuff, that was, man, it was sweet.
Who are some of the guys? So, I mean, obviously Regal's a huge, you always, and you wear his colors.
Yes.
Yeah. Who else was down there? And I'd love to know just the rant, not necessarily the great ones.
Okay, the Mean Street Posse okay. was down there, and it's man, I love those guys. Those guys, Joey Abs was really good, probably one of the at the time the best big guy I'd worked with. You know, Pete Gass was hilarious. Rodney was fantastic.
Would those guys talk to you about like because they were what Shane's friends?
So Joey Abs wasn't. He was one right. of the guys from the Hardy's Omega stuff, but. Like, they'd never really talked to me about being Shane's friends. And it was strange because that was when, like, marijuana was okay in WWE, I think. Like, so there was a drug subculture that I was not a part of at all. Nobody – and not only did I – not only was I not a part of it, I wasn't even aware of it.
Or what until, it looked like, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and so, like, I was like, man – I can't believe these guys drink so much, you know? And, like, little did I know all the other stuff that was going on. So, I mean, it was, yeah, it was weird.
And Bobby Eaton, was he training?
Bobby Eaton, he was there training for a little bit, and then he had some differences with Terry Golden, the guy who was running the place, and so he was ixnayed. So Tracy Smothers came down through there. Like, one of the headbangers was there, the thinner one. I forget
Thrasher?
Which one.
That,
maybe Thrasher.
It's either Mosh or Thrasher. Right? I know that much.
Yeah. Like, Viscera came through there, you know, big Mabel. Like,
And I'll ask this. Was there any guys that – so I understand being 18, young, and almost stupid to the world.
Yes.
Probably still am. I am. But so there's older guys there. Was there any, like, one thing or anything just, like, you remember being, like, impressionable about? Or that left an impression on you that this is what older people do, maybe in wrestling or just in life?
No. I literally have next to zero recollection of the entire thing.
Of the entire thing?
Of the entire thing.
Were you living with Spanky?
I was living with Spanky. Lived with Jason Sensation, a guy named Shooter Schultz who was great. And all of us just kind of lived in this one big townhouse, and it was cool. And people would come in. Reckless Youth came in and lived there for a little bit. Molly Holly came in and lived there for a little bit. Like, it was cool.
And so you get fired. Was it the end of the world for you, or?
I just didn't know what to do, really, because I ended up moving back home. I started going to school. I worked two jobs. I was lucky in the sense that the Haas brothers were down there, and they had, while I was under developmental, I did the Super 8 in 2001, which...
You were under developmental when you did that?
Yeah. And so it used to be, and people don't know this now, but the Super 8 used to be a huge deal. And so...
Me and Punk couldn't get in.
Yeah. For independent wrestlers and stuff like that. And I got to the finals against Low Ki, and that really... helped me make my name, because otherwise I would have been screwed. You know, I would have gone back. Nobody would have booked me type thing. But after that, Jim Kettner was using me. Then other people would start using me. And I was living in Washington and doing that kind of stuff and working two jobs and going to college and all that nonsense, you know. And then Roland Alexander, the infamous from – did you just do a podcast with him?
No, we were supposed to. We're going to do one next time I go back.
Okay,
there.
Yeah. He gave me a job as a trainer down there, which was a guaranteed $350 a week. And then I get to do my bookings on the weekend. And so, yeah, it was golden after that.
So that $350 a week, were you making – on top of the $500, they weren't paying you to do
that? No.
So $350 plus some extra money.
Yeah, $350 plus, you know, whatever I was making on indie shows, which wasn't a lot at the time, you know. So, you know, a lot of weeks I'd bring in $500 or whatever and didn't have rent or anything like that because Roland put me up at his place with his Uncle Al, cheerleader Melissa's dad, and Roland. We all stayed at this place. And
was it a sitcom waiting to be?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So.
And then I don't know if this is well documented. I'm not sure. But you moved to L.A. and you were living in your car, weren't you?
Yes, yeah. And so, but that was just for like a brief period of time. And then they let me, the New Japan had this Inoki Dojo out in Los Angeles. And so I went there and then eventually they let me sleep in the dojo. And I was the first one. And eventually they let a lot of people sleep in the dojo there.
But before eventually there was.
It was just me.
In your car, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then. When they had more people sleeping at the dojo, they had this apartment in downtown Santa Monica, cost $2,500 a month. They let me live there for free because I was going over to New Japan so much. And so, like, occasionally I would room – like, I roomed with Lyoto Machida, the UFC fighter. Really? And, yeah, I roomed with him for, like, a month or two, and then, like, Shinsuke Nakamura and stuff. And so
– I remember I went over there once, and it was – gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. And it's the best free place I've ever stayed.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's like you're a playboy almost, like, yeah, living in that place.
Yeah.
Going from your car and then, oh, because you do a couple Japan tours now, yeah, like, which is how life should work.
Right. Now that you've done a couple Japan tours, it should happen to you,
yeah,
right? Somebody should give you a free place on the beach.
Well,
and
yeah, it's called Punk's Couch.
Right.
It's way better than my apartment. So, but in saying that, in New Japan, and I don't know if these are your stories to tell, but you would always come back on the road with us, and you'd always tell fun Scott Norton stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Scott Norton, and Scott Norton is, he's a great guy. Like, he literally, he could have been one of those guys where he had the veteran status, and I've never drank in my entire life, and he could have tried to make me drink, and he's an intimidating dude and probably one of the strongest people I've ever – him and Mark Henry are the two strongest dudes I've ever met, you know. But he was – and Colt Cabana.
Thank you.
And but he was so genuinely nice, but he also had this awesome temper where, like, little things, like sounds and stuff would, like, set him off. Like, just a dink, 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 dink would set him off.
Ah!
Yeah. And there was this one time where we were driving to the airport. We had plenty of time, you know. There's this car going slow in front of the bus that's driving us to the airport. And
so you're not even driving. You're on a bus.
No, we're on a bus. And we're just sitting there, you know, talking about whatever. And all of a sudden, like, Norton starts freaking out. Like, what? Why is this guy going so slow? Why is he going? And like, finally, the guy, like, Norton runs to the front of the bus. And I'm sure the bus driver was freaking out. But he's, like shaking his fists at the front of the bus at this car. And finally, this car pulls over. And he runs back to the end of the bus so he could put his fist out the window and shake his fist. And I can only imagine what these poor, tiny Japanese people are thinking as Scott Norton is sticking his big fist out the window and shaking it at him. But yeah, he was great. I love Scott Norton.
And did you arm wrestle him?
You know what? I asked him to lock up with me just for a picture. I locked, you know, the arm wrestling lockup.
Is that do they have an official name for that position?
I think they just
is it just a lockup?
It's just locking up, yeah. But just grabbing him like that, you could just feel I couldn't move him with two hands.
Not even,
you know. And
would he tell you war stories from the arm? Was he in the arm wrestling circuit for a while?
Like, I think so. Yeah, he was like a world champion arm wrestler.
I mean, my favorite movie of all time is Over the Top,
and he's in that,
and he's in it.
Yeah,
yeah. Very short, because I'll go back and I'll look and I'll be like, holy shit. But because I used to memorize that movie, like, he wasn't one of the top eight.
Yeah, but
he wasn't Harry Bosco.
But he won that actual tournament to get in the movie. That's my understanding of it. But And do you know what's do you know what I really liked about Scott Norton too is that he knew exactly what he was doing in the ring. Like he was one of my favorite guys to team with over there. We had some really fun matches against Yuji Nagata and Jushin Liger and stuff. And so he was just a great guy to be around.
When you say he knew what he was doing in the ring, like he knew he was just a like psychology, or he just
he knew what the Japanese crowd wanted from him.
Stop you shortly, but it was a pleasure for me when I just went on my first tour with Noah was to be there in there with Bison.
Yeah,
because I not that obviously I don't have as many experiences doing like the tours as you do, but I almost know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah,
because like there's the big guy and he knew exactly what to do, and if I could just kind of step next to him and do my little shtick, but he can guide it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And like he knew exactly what to do when he was in there with the young guys to not make them look like young guys and stuff, and make them look. He really was a whole lot of fun to work with.
Remember how many tours you did of Japan? Because
I've done 30.
Fuck me.
Yeah. So because I started in 1999, and I did one tour for FMW with Lance Cade, and so
was Kigutaro there? Do you remember that?
I don't remember. I did multiple tours with New Japan going over there. Like in 2004, I did 8 tours alone, and then. So I did a lot of tours with New Japan, did a lot of tours with Noah and stuff, and yeah, it's right around 30 tours.
And who are the crazy guys? Any guy jeans that like was George Hines around? Is that a name?
George Hines is a name, but he wasn't that. Like I really didn't meet any crazy gaijin guys. And
how about some randoms? Like those early New Japan tours. There's got to be some.
There was just Dan somebody. He came out of the power plant, and he was – Dan Devine? No.
Was it Ricky Rage and Robbie? Didn't you say you did stuff with them too?
No, I didn't know. I didn't
High
do
Voltage?
Anything. Yeah, I didn't do anything with High Voltage, which –
Which you wish you would have.
Yeah, I wish I would have. So yeah. I mean, it was mostly like I did some stuff with Rick Steiner. Bart Gunn was there, that sort of thing. And then when I was with Noah, it was just – you know, it was a lot of just us Ring of Honor guys and Bison and stuff, you know, so.
And who was the weirdest bond that you made with, maybe that you didn't expect? Is it Norton? How about besides Norton?
It would have to be Norton. You know what? You know who I really got along with well was this referee named Tayama, and he doesn't work for New Japan anymore. But Tayama took such great care of us, you know, and like he was just always so helpful and nice, but also funny, you know. And so yeah, I had a really good bond with him. So.
I'm trying to think. I'm always a big fan of like. So when we were in England, we'd always talk to these guys, and I'd read old stuff, and they'd all go to these random places. You'd always hear about people going on these random tours of like Dubai or whatever. And I know you've gone to a lot of different places. You did go. Where did you? We were in England together at the same time, and I remember you went somewhere awesome with
Cyprus.
Cyprus, yeah.
Cyprus was amazing.
And
Cyprus
I was so jealous that everyone.
Oh
was
my
going.
Gosh! Yeah, and we were there for. 4 or 5 days and put up in this 5-star hotel right on the Mediterranean Sea, and literally not a single show drew more than 30 people. And it was this hard kickboxing ring with 4 ropes. Nobody wanted to take any bumps. I was taking back body drops every night just to pop Robbie Brookside. Just solely.
For him to be like, what are you doing?
Yeah, solely so Robbie would go. But what the hell are you doing? And the idea was is that they were shooting it. They were filming this to put on TV in Cyprus to hopefully draw. But the advertising was horrible. But it was probably one of the best trips I've ever had.
Right, that's a life experience.
Yeah.
And is it more of just, again, it's obvious. It's more of the camaraderie, the idea that you're going with these guys to a different place and you're
right
on the beach together.
Yeah, you're right on the beach and like going and exploring, you know, and it was just so much fun. And I remember we'd go out to this nightclub afterwards and like, you know, it's just strange being in a place like Cyprus where, you know, where there's a mix between the Greeks and the Turkish people there, and then going out into a nightclub and seeing all these people, because it's not like anything I'd really experienced much. It was more like nightclub techno, like, and you know, it was just fun to just see guys go out there. And here, some of them are 40 plus years old and loving it.
Right, but so. You're documented as doing the same thing. Machine Gun was talking about it in one of the past podcasts, that you We'll go cut a rug yourself.
Oh, I love dancing. I love dancing. And
under the influence of nothing.
Yeah.
Just life.
Yeah. And you know what it is? Is it's just like, especially when you're in strange places and like you're at these nightclubs and like, man, why not? Like, just go out there and have a good time. I remember this one time in Germany. El Generico was there. Doug Williams was there. We were having such a good time. And we all go back to this crappy place where we're all staying afterwards. And we're all just like, man, that was such a fun night, you know? And like, yeah, that's cool.
All right. Good. Now you're living in Vegas. You lived everywhere.
Yeah.
Are you a nomad?
Yes. And you know what? This is the longest I've lived anywhere since I've been 18. I've lived here for 2.5 years with a brief 1 month stint where I moved to Tampa. But yeah, when I was 18, I moved to San Antonio. From there, I moved to Memphis. From there, I moved back to Aberdeen, Washington. From there, I moved to the Bay Area. From there, I moved to L.A. Then I moved back to Aberdeen, back to L.A., back to Aberdeen, to Philadelphia, back to Aberdeen. I moved up to a little place called Federal Way so I could be closer to the airport. Then where did I move from there? I moved somewhere else, and then I moved to Las Vegas. So
I'm trying to think where it was. I can't remember. It's just everywhere. Do you own a bed, or do you just take people's?
Well, do you know what? I used to not own a bed. Since I've been in Vegas, I actually got a bed, and now
is that the first bed you've owned?
No, I mean I own a bed in Aberdeen, but because I actually own a house there. One of my buddies rents a room for me, but this is the first bed that like. If I were to move, I'd want to take with me.
Yeah.
Like, because I got it like a Tempur-Pedic bed, so it's good for my back and everything. But yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a nomad.
And you don't live the Vegas lifestyle, though, do you?
No, I'm in bed by 10 o'clock, 10:30 every night.
But you're doing MMA and grappling.
Yes. It's
And besides bacon, this is a passion.
Yeah. So it's I train with Neil Melanson, who is he was Randy Couture's head cornerman for his last couple fights. And he's just a super progressive grappling coach, and it's just really fun to train with him. The only bad thing is a lot of times I get home and I don't have any energy, so I may get in only once a week, you know, and only for an hour
from the road. You're saying,
yeah. So it, you know, I don't get to grapple as much as I'd like to, but yeah, it's definitely a passion and helps keep me sane a little bit.
I mean, you talked about, you know, if you didn't go to WWE, you'd move to Thailand or like.
Oh, I'd love to move to Thailand. I still want to move to Thailand.
And just kickbox people?
Yes. What it is that Thailand, they have these kickboxing camps where you can go and it's relatively cheap. It's like $1,000 a month or something. And they pay for your room, your food, all your training and all that kind of stuff. And it's right on the beach. You can get hour-long massages for like $10. And
I know a couple of places in Chicago.
Yeah. And so yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, regardless of what anybody believes about religion or anything like that, the only thing that we know is that we have this one life, right? And so there's all these different things I want to do. And the hardest thing about wrestling is that I love wrestling, but there's also a zillion other things that I'd like to do with my life.
And
so,
do you feel, I don't know, because you're so good at it, it's like, is it you're cuffed into it that you feel responsible to do it, or?
Well, the problem now is that I don't know how to do anything else to make money, right? And I'm not doing wrestling just for money, like, I really enjoy it, but I've been wrestling essentially full time since I was 18. There was a brief 3 month time where I had a couple jobs and stuff, but since I was 18 and I don't know how to do anything else. And if you don't have any job experience, what are you going
to
do?
And like, and just knowing you, your vision was always like, well, I'm still going to go to school. And you were randomly going to school.
Yeah, I actually nearly have my associate's degree. I am 5 credits away from my associate's degree. I'm just missing 5 credits of PE.
Because you haven't done any physical education.
Yeah, you can't take PE classes online. So,
well, I don't know. Can you take them around the world and wrestling rings.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how that works. So.
But is now what are you? You're 31. You're like me.
I'm 30.
30. I'm like, you young.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But do you say, okay, maybe obviously I'm not going to go to school and learn another trade? Like you said, like this is all I know now. Mm-hmm. Is it at that point or
no? My mom went to school when she was 40 and got her master's degree, and now she used to work with underprivileged kids. Now she works with the Native Americans and stuff to help them out. With psychology and stuff like that, you know, so she does a lot of therapy stuff. And so her going and getting her master's degree at 40 was no big deal. And, I've never made lots of money. I've never been one of those guys who's made $1 million or anything like that, but I don't spend a lot of money. So I've been able to save a lot of the money that I've made. And so I could take a couple years off and just go to school, you know, and then do whatever. So
Greenpeace was a thing for a while.
Yep. I'm just going over here. So I was going to go into the Peace Corps. And so I applied for the Peace Corps, but they wouldn't take me because I have no real skills. The problem for the people with the Peace Corps is that they get a lot of flakes, and that's even with like college graduates and stuff like that. So they want you to have some sort of degree or be able to, if you don't have a degree, be able to speak a second language or have some sort of actual skill, like know how to do irrigation systems or something like that. I don't know how to do anything, but if you give me a shovel, I can dig a ditch, you know? And so
a diploma from Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy.
I can teach you guys how to do a wrist lock. So, anyway, which is, you know, what's funny is when we did those seminars and stuff, you can teach people who want to be wrestlers how to do wrist locks, and they don't even want to learn it. So, imagine these people who don't want to be wrestlers. Yeah. They definitely don't want to learn it. So,
Like today, you're in New York City. They got a mm-hmm. driver driving you around.
Yes.
You know, I'd love to know, like, some of those almost perks are like, hey, here's independent wrestling. I mean, because like I said, kind of going back to the beginning, is you know, you were Mr. Independent Wrestling. You know that lifestyle, and now here's the lifestyle of WWE. Like, what are some of those? This is nice.
The biggest this is nice is almost every venue has a shower.
A shower.
That's my big thing. The getting driven around by a car, I don't care. You know, you could pick me. Like when Wayne and Mary would pick us up in their van, I didn't care. Right. You know what I mean? Like, so I mean, all that kind
of
stuff.
But I'd like to know the differences. Like, some yeah. of the, hey, you know, or stuff that you've done. Have you done promotional stuff? I always enjoy.
You know, I haven't done a lot of that. They don't use me to promote a lot of stuff. But just like this is my first third-party signing that I've done with WWE, where they've picked me up with like the car service and all that kind of stuff, and it's interesting that they really treat you like you're a superstar, which is
because we know we're not.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing.
We're just schmucks.
Yeah, that's the thing is that the whole concept of being a superstar is ridiculous. Everybody's just people, yeah. You know, and like
today, we're sitting here in this hotel room. It's Punk's hotel room, and I have, like, this wedding. And I'm just sitting here, and, like, it just reminds me of those first trips almost, like, up to St. Paul where we just sit in a hotel room with, like, five people. And to me, it's just Punk. And then I know that there's a fucking, like, a mob that just wants to touch him.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's almost like you are this quote-unquote superstar, but, like, I know you're just a dude.
Right, well, and realistically, the people don't think I'm a superstar either. I was just at this signing with Zack Ryder, and it was just interesting because, you know, with his YouTube channel and all that kind of stuff, he has so many, like, these hardcore fans. And I have a couple from left over from the independent days, but people who are WWE fans aren't necessarily huge Daniel Bryan fans. And people would be, like, lining up to get Zack Ryder autographs, and then they, like, sheepishly walk by me with their head looking down because they don't want my autograph, you know? And so it's like, yeah. But it's interesting because in WWE, things are different things are really important. Your entrance is so important, you know what I mean? Coming out and doing something. And I remember Ricky Martin Ricky Marvin telling me in Mexico that the most important thing isn't your wrestling or anything like that. It's your entrance, it's your gear, it's your physique, and he was really frustrated with that. And I was like, yeah, that sounds frustrating because I've always just walked to the ring, and my thing has always just been I get in there and wrestle. And now. And I still remember that he said that, and now in WWE it's totally the case. That is so much. 90% of becoming popular in WWE is your entrance, your ring gear, and your physique. and being, it doesn't matter if I'm a really good wrestler, because most of the time you're not out there wrestling for that long. So,
and Jill Thompson made your design.
Jill,
right?
Thompson is the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Jill Thompson is the Eisner Award winning comic book artist of Beasts of Burden, which is one of my favorite comic books. And yeah, so she designs all my ring gear and all that kind of stuff. The hardest part is she sends me all these awesome designs. I can't get people that are reliable enough to make it in a timely fashion.
Right.
Like, so I've actually kind of found somebody in Georgia who's starting to do things for me in a timely fashion that fits and everything. But man, ring gear people are, it's hard.
It's, and like, I've always said that there's so much money to make in ring gear if people, but what happens is someone finds a good one. Uh-huh. Then they get swamped with orders. Then they go crazy, and they're like, yeah, "I can't do it anymore." And then you never hear from them again.
Yeah. Well, I think the key is if you get really good at ring gear, is to limit the number of people you do ring gear for.
Yeah.
So you can't take every order that people send you. Mm-hmm. Like, you just have to say, "Listen, I'm swamped right now. I can't do it. I'm sorry. Maybe if you get back to me in a certain amount of time, you know." But nobody does that. So.
And then going into entrances and stuff that's important. Uh-huh. One of the reasons that I always love you and I always tell this is at one point you weighed 199 pounds, and everybody's known in wrestling for always jacking up their weight. You would be billed at 185.
185, yeah, yeah. Well, it's because I didn't start at 185, but my wrestling weight has always been 185, and I like to mess with people a little bit. And the only person who's really gotten angry with me about it was Austin Aries. He was like, because I think he was billed at, like, I don't know, 190 something, or maybe even 200. And
right.
There I am getting billed at 185 and clearly taller and a little bit bigger than he is, you know? And so yeah, but yeah, I just think it's funny.
It always says something about just the fact that I've, you know, for years, for 50, 60 years, wrestling has, you know, Andre the Giant sitting on the fucking, standing on the platform to be taller.
Yeah.
You know, and Vince, and here you are, just almost like a rebel outlaw, just like, fuck it, man.
Yeah, well, I think my thing has always been that it didn't matter what my size was or anything like that until kind of I got to WWE and, you know, they want you to get bigger and stuff like that. But, like, in Ring of Honor, those people didn't care what size I was. Because I would – sometimes I fluctuate 5 to 10 pounds or whatever, and it never made a difference to those people. Like, what they wanted to see was the in-ring action.
And I was always grateful for that, too, as a guy who kind of always deals with kind of being bigger and, like, always – because – you know, obviously body images in WWE, but in ROH, I would always – in my head – but, like, Gabe and them, they never give a shit if I was a couple pounds heavy, you know?
Yeah, no. And I know that they talked to a couple people whose weight got a little out of hand, you know what I mean? But other than that, all they want you to do is look like an athlete, right? You
know? Perform.
Yeah, and perform and go out there. And you know, and it's interesting because if you look at some of the fighters, the UFC fighters, they don't necessarily have the best bodies, you know? Like, a lot of them don't have any chest because it's counterproductive to have these huge chest muscles. It's just more weight, especially when you're having to cut weight and stuff like that. Like, a lot of that kind of stuff, it's just for show, you know. And I've always been a very functional trainer. I like training for function. So.
But you're tanning now, though.
I'm not tanning.
Are you?
I'm spray tanning.
Now, I recommended that to you years ago.
Yeah, but I had no interest in being tan, and that's the thing. I still have no interest in being tan, but they have an interest in me being tan. So
but then you said, like, I was covering up your what are they called? The
vitiligo.
You're like, yeah, I'm putting patches on it and I'm tanning. I'm
no,
like,
I never
like,
put why patches
you,
on it.
You didn't, or you were putting lotion on it to make sure it doesn't get. When you were going under the tanning booth.
Oh, yeah. You have. I had to cover it before.
Right. But I was like, why wouldn't you just spray tan?
Yeah. Well, I was never really a good tanner before. I never really wanted to tan. I just felt, oh, maybe I should, or, you know. And so, like, yeah, and I didn't understand the spray tan thing. And now I kind of do it sometimes, and I just hate it. You know what it is? It's spraying chemicals all over your skin. And that's probably worse for you than actual tanning, but because I have this vitiligo, it's you know, it's just safer for me.
Everything's worse for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, you said it first. We only have this one life.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all going down.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like everything's wrong. You know? Like, everything's going to get you in the end.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, and especially because we live such unnatural lives. So it's interesting because we've evolved as humans, right, to be in small close-knit societies. Well, now we don't have that. How do people mostly communicate? Via text message, via internet? You know, how often do people actually see people who love them? Very rarely. I know I saw my sister this week. This is the first time I've seen my sister since May. Right. And so how often do I see people who actually love me? A couple times a year. You know what I mean? And the rest of the
right
time.
Right now, Brian. Yeah,
you know, and how often do we see each other? Last time I, you know, and so I'm around a lot of people who like me. But to be around people who actually care about you and like genuinely care about your well-being and like that sort of thing, it just doesn't happen a lot nowadays, especially with our profession, being that I live so far away from my family. So.
Well, you can be loved on the Vegas Strip, I think, any day of the week.
For $100 at the Asian massage place.
Just pick up a flyer.
Right. Yeah, so.
Well, good, man. It's good to see you. I'm glad you're happy.
Thank you.
You have
thank
a YouTube you. Channel.
Well, so I did have a YouTube channel.
Where you called me out.
What? Did I?
You motherfucker. Oh.
Well, the whole thing with the YouTube channel is that, so... With WWE, you can only feature so many people, right? And Zack Ryder did a great thing with going on YouTube and making himself a name. You're doing a great job with this on the podcast of providing an alternate source of gaining fans and gaining followers and stuff. And I felt
showing
like,
the world who you are.
Yeah, and I felt like I needed to do that. The problem is that I am not technologically savvy in any way, shape, or form. And then when my camera broke, I was like. Well, now I don't know what to do.
Oh,
so now, yeah. So now I had two episodes of my Technique of the Week videos, and that was out the window. So,
well, all right. So they can't watch that. Twitter,
right.
You're on Twitter.
I am Twitter. I haven't probably tweeted in over a week. And this is, I'm so bad with all of that kind of stuff because to me it's unimportant, but it is important, right? It's really so important. And
you just don't want to do it. You don't want to be bothered.
Well, it's not that I don't want to be bothered. It's that I don't enjoy
it.
It's not that I even hate the idea of it. I don't enjoy it. It's not something that like I live my life based around my passions. Like, I do the things I like to do, and that's one of the great parts about being a wrestler is that you don't have to necessarily do all these things that you don't want to do. And but then all of a sudden now there's all the social media that I probably should do, but I don't necessarily want to do it, you know? And so yeah, but if people want
to
support
I'm
me.
I'm trying to – this is what we're getting at.
I'm trying to get
you supported
okay,
here.
So here's how people can –
make a check out to Greenpeace.
No. Well, actually, heifer.org. It's H-E-I-F. I don't know if it's two Fs or one F, but .org. What they do is they like provide, say, sheep or cows or something to villages so that they have their own way of creating their own food sources and that sort of thing. So if you're going to donate, that's my favorite. But if you want to help me specifically, the best thing that people can do is really cheer for me when they come to the shows, bring signs and stuff because that's very visible to the people in the thing, and then buy merchandise. But I hate to ask people to buy merchandise because times are so tough for everybody right now. Like, why? You know, I don't think if you have the option between saving money for your kid's college fund and buying a Daniel Bryan t-shirt, I think you should probably just put that money in your kid's college fund. But I probably shouldn't say things like that.
Yeah, but that's that's your charm.
Right?
That, honestly, that is a better sales pitch. Like, more people will now buy t-shirts because you tell them not to.
So, and apparently, you know what's funny is WWE has all this stuff that comes out. Now they're coming out with some Daniel Bryan wristbands, you know, those, you know, and like, I'm like, how, I don't wear anything like that. I don't know how that becomes.
Could you just
marketable?
Picture you like in all this, you know how Cena is decked out in everything? Like just standing there looking awkward with your hands to your side.
Yeah.
And Bryan Daniel apparel.
Yeah.
Really flashy colors.
Right, yeah. So, but I think they're actually coming out with a new Daniel Bryan t-shirt, which is way better than the other one that looks like I drew.
How many, including myself, how many texts did you get of like, what is that t-shirt?
Lots. And, you know, and it was so funny because I said, I'd like it to look kind of like an indie band t-shirt. And, oh, you know what I did just come out with? I just came out with my first hit single.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Can it be Song of the Week?
I mean, I don't, I suppose, but it's Kimmy Dawson who, A lot of people know her. She did the soundtrack for that movie Juno.
Right.
And so she lives in Olympia. And we started talking on Twitter and stuff like that. So anyways, she did this song, and her album just came out. It was last week, I think. She did this song about Captain Lou Albano, and I do the backup vocals for
wow.
I rap. I'm a rapper.
Stop it. You stop this.
So look up Kimmy Dawson, Captain Lou. You can buy it on iTunes. It's actually the whole album is actually, if you like that kind of stuff, it's really good.
Yes.
So
yes, yes, and yes. All right, and your website real quick.
I have BrianDanielson.net that never gets updated, but I mean, it does get updated maybe once or twice a month. You know, I put stuff on there, but I've started to think that what I'm going to put on there is, YouTube videos of matches that I really like. Not of me.
Colt Cabana
like,
versus Sal Renaro.
Yeah, Colt Cabana versus Sal Renaro. I love this match, and I want WWE fans to see all this whole other world of wrestling out there that's just different and awesome. So
I remember giving, and you don't even know this, I gave a match of you and Claudio, I think it was from Toronto. I remember giving it to Norman Smiley and being like, look, there's awesome wrestling. And he was like, that was wonderful. And he watched it and he loved it. So yeah. I understand the idea of wanting to share great wrestling.
Yeah. Well, and when I got let go last year and was doing the independent stuff, that was my whole goal, was to just bring more people to independent wrestling. And and it worked to an extent, but I don't know if they stayed, you know? So,
well, you know, if you got 3% of... It's a start. You
yeah.
know, if you can get, if they have no clue, you know, that's yeah. 3 more people or 3% more people.
Yeah.
I miss the camaraderie with you too, buddy. I miss the road trips. I miss the good times. But it was great to see you. I appreciate you being on the show. I know all of us, this community, this family, we're all going to support you in whatever you do, whether you're on Superstars, SmackDown, the video game, your action figures. We love that you're out there. You're doing it. You finally made a name for yourself. You deserve it so much, man. And I appreciate you being on the show. That's it for this week. Before we get out of here, though, let's get into some plugs and upcoming events. All right, the best way you can support, ColtMerch.com. T-shirts, buttons, pictures, posters, DVDs. I got a Twitter, at Colt Cabana. Follow me, see what I have to say about the world of professional wrestling, what I have to say in general, or who the next guest on The Art of Wrestling is going to be. My email, if you're a promoter and you want to put me on your upcoming show, convention, whatnot, ColtWrestling@gmail.com. I got a P.O. box. I love to get stale mail when you guys send it to me. That's on the front page of WeLoveColt.com. Every Monday night, myself and stand-up comedian Marty DeRosa, we do a web series, CreativeHasNothingForYou.com. It takes a minute. Please go watch it and support. I appreciate that. And we got a Facebook.com/AOW podcast. That's a great way to go over there. We can talk about each episode each week. Some upcoming events. Saturday, November 12th, I'll be in Austin, Texas, AnarchyChampionshipWrestling.com. Sunday, November 13th, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, ChikaraPro.com presents their very first iPay-per-view, High Noon. I'll be wrestling Archibald Peck, Marchy Archie. Friday, November 18th, Chicago, Illinois, ChicagoStyleWrestling.com. Saturday, November 19th, heading back to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, IWCWrestling.com. Friday, November 25th, Chicago, Illinois, Billy Corrigan's ResistancePro.com. Saturday, December 3rd, LaSalle, Illinois, DreamWaveWrestling.com. Thursday, December 8th, Raleigh, North Carolina, GougeWrestling.com. Friday, December 9th, Charlotte, North Carolina, PWExperience.com. And Saturday, December 10th, York, South Carolina, same thing, PWX and then Experience.com. Guys, this has been The Art of Wrestling. Hey, for Colt Cabana, I'm Colt Cabana. Thanks.